Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Masks on planes? Not anymore. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
A federal judge strikes down the law that requires face coverings on public transportation.
It's going to be a victory for people who have hated the mask mandates.
The ruling and what the legal fight means for travelers nationwide. Russian missiles strike Lviv, the western city under rare attack as Ukraine braces for the fall of Mariupol.
And we're doing everything we can to try to get them more assistance as fast as possible.
Murder mystery. A New York City mom stabbed 58 times, her body found inside a hockey bag. Tonight, the trail of blood connecting two crime scenes and the possible killer spotted on camera. A CNBC exclusive inside Secret Service headquarters where agents are on the hunt for crypto criminals.
At the end of the day, we want to get money back to the victims.
Elon Musk hints a new way to take control of Twitter. A Made in America mandate for steel and iron nationwide. And bracing for a winter storm in spring.
Live from CNBC, the facts. The truth. The news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. The mask mandate for everyone on planes and other public transportation is no longer in effect. A federal judge in Florida overturned it just this afternoon. In the ruling, the Trump-appointed judge called the requirement unlawful and wrote, "It exceeds the CDC's statutory authority and violates procedures required for agency rulemaking." The White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the decision is disappointing.
The CDC continues recommending wearing a mask in public transit. The Department of Homeland Security, who would be implementing, and the CDC are reviewing the decision. And, of course, the Department of Justice would make any determinations about litigation.
So far, no further litigation and no appeal. Reporters asked Jen Psaki if the mandate is no longer in effect, and she didn't answer, leaving everyone in a bit of limbo. But in the last hour, a senior administration official, unnamed, told us and others that the mask mandate is off, that the TSA has stopped enforcing it while the White House reviews the ruling. The mandate had been in effect for more than a year. It applied to planes, buses, trains, subways, and everywhere you get on and off them. The CDC extended the requirement several times. It was set to expire early next month. Now it's struck down by the court. CBC's Shamari Stone live on our top story tonight at Reagan National Airport outside D.C. Shamari.
Shep, an administration official tells NBC News that the judge's ruling basically means that the CDC mask mandate is no longer in effect.
I think it makes me feel okay. I'm in line with the judge's, order on this.
Arian Rashid flew to D.C. from Miami. She's relieved she doesn't have to wear a mask anymore.
I think that we've had enough time to make sure that we take the precautions that we need to once people are sick.
In the 59-page ruling, the judge, an appointee of former President Trump, ruled the mask mandate exceeded the authority of the Centers for Disease Control in the coronavirus pandemic. Dale Weiss says the judge made a bad decision.
I disagree with it. I think we should continue wearing masks even when we're done with COVID, hopefully soon. I would like to continue wearing a mask.
The judge also says the CDC failed to justify its decision, adding, quote, "a limited remedy would be no remedy at all." The CDC recently extended the mask mandate to May 3rd.
We've, as a nation, been through a lot, and so I feel pretty safe about that at this point. I think we've taken the utmost precautions that the country has been able to take for a very long time.
We're waiting for a response from the airlines. Basically, Alaska Airlines is stating that masks are optional, and United is saying that they're no longer needed. They're no longer required. Shep?
Shamari Stone, thanks. The long-awaited Battle of Donbas has begun. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the Russian war machine has officially launched its all-out assault on eastern Ukraine. It's time to see if Vladimir Putin can turn around his disastrous invasion after a series of humiliating setbacks and heavy losses on the battlefield. For weeks now, Russian troops have been regrouping and repositioning for this new major offensive in the east.
Now we can state that the Russian forces have started the battle for the Donbas, for which they were preparing for a long time. A big part of all the Russian army is now concentrated on this offensive. No matter how many Russian soldiers are being sent there, we will be fighting. We will defend ourselves. We will fight. We will not give away anything.
The United States providing the Ukrainians with heavy artillery to beat back the onslaught. The Pentagon reports the U.S. will train Ukrainian forces how to use the American howitzers in the coming days. Leading up to this large-scale offensive, Russia unleashed a barrage of missile attacks across Ukraine, including the first deadly strike in the relatively safe western city of Lviv, right on NATO's doorstep. Meantime, images are starting to appear on social media that appear to show the Russian flagship Moskva on fire before it sank last week. The Ukrainians hit that warship with two cruise missiles, according to the Pentagon. We've not been able to verify these images. NBC's Ali Aruzi witnessed one of the cruise missiles fly overhead. He's with us now from the western Ukraine city of Lviv. Ali.
Good evening, Shep. We were doing an interview at about 8:30 local this morning in the center of Lviv when we heard a whistling sound over our head. Then there was a loud thump. Before we realized what happened, another object went flying over our head. It was so big at first, I thought it was an airplane. And then we realized it was a cruise missile hitting the center of the city. It was followed by three or four more strikes after that one. And this is the first time the Russians have hit the center of Lviv. Let's take a listen to that moment. And then, Shep, this is also the first time that people have been killed in the center of Lviv. Before, there had been strikes on the outskirts of the city, no fatalities, but this time, seven people were killed in this airstrike in a heavily built-up area. And one of the people injured was a three-year-old child that had escaped Kharkiv. So coming to safety in Lviv, that child was injured by a Russian missile. Elsewhere in the country, Shep, in Mariupol, the Russians had given the defenders of that city an ultimatum: surrender or die, and they have chosen to fight to the death. That is a besieged city. It is the most bombed, most destroyed city in this country, and the Russians are determined to take that city over. A handful of fighters called the Azov Brigade are trying to hold them off, but the Russians say it's only a matter of short time before they take that city. The odds are against them, but time and time again, the Ukrainians have defied the odds. Shep.
Ali, thank you. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has completed the first step to becoming a member of the European Union. He formally submitted Ukraine's answers to a questionnaire to kick off the application process. The European Commission's president has vowed to fast-track Ukraine's application. Let's bring in Evelyn Farkas now. She was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Eurasia, and Ukraine during the Obama administration. Evelyn, what exactly would happen if Ukraine does indeed join the EU in the middle of this war?
Well, I think, Shep, it's a great signal to send to Vladimir Putin because, of course, the reason the Ukrainians went to the streets in 2014 to begin with was because they wanted to join the European Union. And at the time, the leader of Ukraine was basically a Kremlin crony who had promised the Ukrainian people that they could join the EU and then took back his word. And so the people went to the streets. Then you had the big protest, the Maidan Revolution, it was called. And of course, we worked out a compromise with the Russian government for a government that would just be in transition until there were elections. Fast forward to today, this is what Russia's tried to prevent. Ukraine politically is winning.
You know, the Battle of Donbas has begun, according to the president. Is it too late to train the Ukrainians how to use these howitzers and other weapons that the U.S. is sending?
Well, it's never too late. Obviously, there are about 200,000 Ukrainians fighting now, most of them obviously focusing their effort in the Donbas area. And so if we can train them, and Admiral Kirby said that it would be just a matter of days or at the maximum weeks, that will be sufficient time. Obviously, I also would have to agree that we should have done this earlier. But it's never too late. And the more equipment we can send in to the Ukrainians now, the faster, the better.
What's coming in the East, Evelyn, it looks just awful.
Yeah, it's going to be awful.
Evelyn Farkas, thanks so much. North Korea claims it test-fired a new type of missile over the weekend, this one capable of carrying nuclear warheads. This was Pyongyang's 13th weapons test in just 3.5 months. That's more tests than they conducted in the entire year in 2021. North Korea related photos and released them now of Kim Jong-un overseeing the launch and celebrating with his military commanders. This comes as the U.S. and South Korea begin annual joint military exercises. The North Koreans claim the drills are a rehearsal for an invasion. They always do, and they often respond with weapons tests. More on the pandemic coming in this news hour, including a new push for a drug that could help people with long-haul COVID. Plus, the search for a suspect after a gruesome discovery in New York. A mother of two found stuffed in a duffel bag, stabbed dozens of times. And the world's richest man keeps tweeting about his desire to buy Twitter. Now the Twitter founder, Jack Dorsey, weighs in on Elon Musk's battle to scarf up the social media platform.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, package-less and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Police in New York City are searching for a suspect they say murdered a mother of two and stuffed her body in a duffel bag. They say early on Saturday morning, a jogger discovered the body. The woman's name, Orshaya Gall. Police say they followed a trail of blood from that duffel bag back to her home. Now they say they've identified a person of interest. Local coverage now from NBC4 New York and reporter Mark Santilla.
Birds chirping in a Queens neighborhood just before sunrise on Saturday. Police sources say the person you see wheeling a duffel bag down 75th Avenue may be the person who killed Orshaya Gall.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. And by the day, it gets worse.
Inside the bag, our sources say, is Gall's body. Multiple NYPD officials telling News 4 Gall was stabbed 58 times in the neck, torso, and left arm. Police say based on wounds to her palm and inside her fingers, she tried to fight off her attacker.
So I was shocked, actually. So it's just very upsetting and comes upon all the other, unfortunately, all the other violence that's going on in the city right now.
A jogger discovered the blood-soaked bag near Metropolitan and the Jackie Robinson Parkway. Police followed a blood trail from the bag nearly half a mile back to Gall's home here on Juno Street. Today, investigators removed evidence they hope leads them to the killer.
But it's very frightening and concerning to everyone in Forest Hills and the surrounding community.
Investigators believe Gall was attacked in the basement while her 13-year-old son was home on the top floor. Police questioned the teen and later released him. Police say Gall's husband and older son were out of town visiting colleges on the West Coast, then planned on meeting Gall and their younger son in Michigan. Police sources say around 5 Saturday morning, the killer is believed to have sent Gall's husband a threatening text message from her phone. Just moments ago, we spoke with multiple law enforcement sources who tell us detectives have identified a person of interest in the killing. They're trying to track him down right now. Our sources say it is a man who knew the victim and had access to the home. In the Forest Hills section of Queens, I'm Mark Santilla. Shep?
Mark, thank you. At least four major shootings across the country over the holiday weekend. Police in Pittsburgh say they're still searching for suspects in a deadly mass shooting at an Airbnb.
He got a gun!
You can see the chaos breaking out at a massive party there. Police say multiple gunmen fired nearly 100 shots at the party in the early morning hours of yesterday, Easter Sunday. They're accused of killing two 17-year-old boys and hurting eight others. Cops say many of the people at the party were underage. They say some people jumped from windows, cutting themselves on glass and breaking bones. An Airbnb spokesman says the company put a lifetime ban on the person who booked the house and that the company's considering all legal options. Also yesterday, police in Portland, Oregon say they responded to a deadly shooting. One man died, they say, three juveniles hurt. And in South Carolina, two shootings over the weekend. One at a nightclub in Hampton County, near about 2 hours west of Charleston. The other at a mall in Columbia on Saturday. Nearly two dozen people hurt in those two shootings. Today, cops said they arrested a second suspect in the mall shooting. Both suspects facing attempted murder and assault charges. The first man they took into custody now under house arrest. His lawyer says he opened fire in self-defense. Police say they're still searching for a third suspect in that one. Was he hinting at a plan to buy more of Twitter or just paying tribute to an Elvis song? Tonight, the Wall Street speculation on the ambiguous tweet from Elon Musk. A near record number of migrants crossing the U.S. southern border last month. Every day, about 1,000 of them are Ukrainian. And one neighborhood in Chicago is waiting for them with open arms.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
A robot could grow your next salad. A multi-million dollar tech startup called Iron Ox uses machines to grow produce. The company reports those robots create less waste and make farming more sustainable. Agriculture accounts for more than 10% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. That's according to USDA data from 2018. So how do these farming robots actually work? CBC's senior climate correspondent Diana Olick found out as part of her series, Clean Start.
Meet Grover and Phil. They're autonomous robots, or farmers of the future, working at Iron Ox, a six-year-old California-based farm tech startup.
We grow in natural light greenhouses, and our goal is to decentralize farming so we can grow closer to people in a more sustainable way.
Iron Ox is combining robotics, AI, and indoor farming to transform industrial agriculture.
We have different robots that are tending to the plants. They're checking on it, they're scanning for issues, and they're adjusting the amount of nutrients it gets, the amount of water it gets.
It is in direct contrast to what Alexander, who grew up on a Texas farm, calls the spray and pray approach to agriculture, where more chemicals create more quantity, less quality. The advantage of growing indoors is growing anything at any time, regardless of climate and climate change. Iron Ox can also vary what it grows, from vegetables to fruits and berries. It also uses hydroponics, growing crops without soil, so water goes directly to the roots.
A lot of the water in field farming gets just washed out and never actually reaches the plant.
Iron Ox is now expanding to Texas, just outside Austin. It sells to retailers like Whole Foods, as well as to local restaurants. Alexander says the company will produce about 100 times more produce over the next 18 months. Iron Ox is backed by Bill Gates' Breakthrough Energy Ventures, Crosslink Ventures, R7 Partners, ENIAC Ventures, Pathbreaker and IO Ventures, and Amplify Ventures. Total funding to date, $98 million.
And there is plenty of competition in this space, from hydroponics to vertical farming, but the space is incredibly large. Alexander points out that food done right has the ability to reach more people than the top five tech companies combined. And the need to do it right is now more urgent as climate change threatens food security. Shep.
Diana, thanks. There's a new twist tonight in the Twitter takeover battle. Today, the billionaire Elon Musk slammed Twitter's board of directors. He says they won't be paid if he gets the company. In a tweet, he wrote, "Board salary will be $0 if my bid succeeds." So that's about $3 million a year saved right there. Last week, Elon Musk offered $43 billion to buy Twitter and take it private. That led to Twitter's board adopting the so-called poison pill, a sort of corporate defense tactic that would prevent Musk from increasing his stake in the company. But Twitter officials note in a statement that it can still engage with other bidders interested in buying the thing. Over the weekend, Musk tweeted what's been described as a cryptic message that has a lot on Wall Street wondering what he's about to do. He wrote, "Love me tender." They included the musical notes there, the emojis. Maybe this was simply listening to the 1956 Elvis song, but the analyst suggests he might be handing it a more tender offer to Twitter shareholders. Kara Swisher, now New York Times contributing opinion writer. I mean, do we have any way of knowing what this man is doing ever?
Yes, he's going to do a tender offer. You can, if I speak Elon, I think you can speak Elon. He's pretty clear that that's what he's doing. He's going to do a tender offer here and appeal directly to shareholders, which is something Elon does. He appeals directly to people.
What happened to best and final?
You know, it's deal making. Come on. You've been in deals, haven't you?
Yeah.
This is it.
Not
this,
one like this.
But still.
You know, if he were to up his bid, I mean, would Twitter's board be more likely to accept it, or does this have really nothing to do with money?
Look, Twitter's board's job is to get the price up, right? Because it's been as high as $77. They've got to kind of hold that out. They've got to show that, secondly, both of them have to show that Elon has the money to buy this. That's one thing he's got to show. He can't say he has sufficient funds. He's got to show he has sufficient funds. And so doing a tender offer, you know, if they won't do it his way, once he shows he has sufficient funds, the price right now, as I said, is lowball, but not that lowball. It's actually a pretty fair price, and I think it would fall in that bounds. And so all he has to show is he's got the money, and then he'll have the company. That's pretty much, because there don't seem to be any competing offers here yet, at least.
He wasn't the only one to criticize the board at Twitter in a tweet just yesterday. The former CEO and current board member Jack Dorsey at Jack wrote that the company's board has consistently been the dysfunction of Twitter. Is he right about that? And if so, I mean, isn't he kind of partly to blame here?
Yeah, he picked that board. Yeah, so I don't know what to say. He doesn't like his family. I mean, that was a weird one, but not unlike him. He's close to Musk, actually, and he was happy that Musk was coming on the board. He's leaving the board. And, you know, some people feel he'd been pushed out by the most recent board members at Elliott and some other places. You know, he's a founder, and so I think he wants this to sell to Elon Musk is what it seems like to me. And so it's unprecedented for a board member to do this, but, you know, everything Elon Musk touches becomes unprecedented, and can he do that kind of thing?
Kara, right after the bell today, we got word from a Wall Street Journal report of some more interest. Is a bidding war coming here? Do you see that?
You know, I don't believe everything. Not that the Wall Street Journal does fantastic reporting, but I mean, it's going to be in the interests of the Twitter board for there to seem like this is a horse race of some sort. It's in Elon's interest to say it isn't, and do it right now. You know, this is typical deal making, but there should be interest. There's a lot of value here, even though Twitter's been, a sort of a woeful business. The stock has sort of stayed flat since it went public. Compared to other tech companies, it's a real loser. It does have unprecedented influence, and it also, it's very hard to find a global network of influencers anywhere for this price. So in that regard, for a lot of people, it's a cheap stock. For others, it's going to be hard to afford. So we'll see. And it's also controversial. So you're not going to see an Apple necessarily wade in here. A Google would have a hard time doing it. Facebook cannot, although I suspect Facebook would love to grab this property because of the scrutiny of the federal government. So it would have to be hedge funds who might want to join with Elon, by the way. They might want a piece of this. Who knows?
Kara, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chip.
Long haul COVID. It can keep you sick for months on end. But what if a drug already on the market could help in a big way? Researchers hope some new anecdotal evidence might turn into scientific fact. And Ukrainian refugees on the run from war. How some of them ended up in one Chicago neighborhood where the locals are trying to make their new surroundings feel like home. Bottom of the hour, top of the news, coming up on CNBC. The housing market? Home builder confidence is on the decline. And that's what's topping CNBC on the money. U.S. home builder confidence down for the fourth straight month in April. That's new today from the National Association of Home Builders. Home builder sentiment at its lowest level since last September. The experts say costs to build a home and to buy one are very high. And they say supply chain disruptions and a spike in mortgage rates are keeping some first-time buyers on the sidelines. The push to unionize now headed to Apple. Workers at Apple's flagship Grand Central Terminal store in New York City taking steps to form a union. That's according to a website launched by its organizers. Apple has 270 retail stores across the country. If successful, the union would be Apple's first for one of those stores. The tech giant has yet to report whether it would support or fight the effort. And a new requirement to use American-made materials for new projects funded by the $1 trillion infrastructure package. That's new guidance today from the Biden administration. It directs federal agencies to buy materials like U.S. iron and U.S. steel for new bridges, water pipes, or road repairs. The rules allow for a waiver if there's not enough domestic producing or if the materials cost way too much. On Wall Street, the Dow down 40, the S&P finished flat, and the NASDAQ down 19. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news.
Tracking crypto criminals inside the Secret Service effort to track down stolen money. A pill designed to help with severe COVID could be the key to relief for long-haul patients. But first, a surge of migrants at the southern border.
Last month, Border Patrol arrested nearly 210,000 undocumented migrants trying to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. That's according to a federal court filing reviewed by Reuters. The count is a 24% increase from the same time last month, or the same month last year, I should say. It's also the highest monthly total in more than two decades. Border officials bracing for a wave of migrants as the Biden administration plans to lift a COVID-era policy next month. It's called Title 42. It allows border agents to quickly expel hundreds of thousands of migrants and asylum seekers in order to stop COVID from spreading in the U.S. This year, more than half of the migrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border have come from Central American countries, Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. But some migrants are also coming from farther away. According to internal documents reviewed by NBC News, an average of more than 1,000 Ukrainian migrants per day have shown up at the U.S.-Mexico border in just the past week. This comes as one of America's biggest cities welcomes Ukrainian refugees who are escaping the war. In Chicago, here's CNBC's Perry Russum.
There's a part of Chicago where you see more Ukrainian flags than American, a neighborhood 10 blocks wide where blue and yellow is outside nearly every home. It's called Ukrainian Village. There are streamers outside St. Nicholas Cathedral School.
Who here recently came over after the invasion? Raise your hand if you just came over from the invasion.
The school is a magnet for children running from war. Here, we met Katya. She's in the middle in the gray sweatshirt.
Was it helpful coming over and having people here who spoke Ukrainian around the same age and go to school?
Katya's new classmate translated for us.
Yeah, it's good.
Anna Cirilli is the school's principal.
Since the invasion, we've had 31 new students enroll.
Cirilli showed us a poem on a new student's locker. It reads, "I am Andrew. I want tank. I need war is end. I hear loud. I see kids. I feel sad." Andrew is in kindergarten.
We partner with many organizations, one being Big Shoulders Fund, and they've provided us with a crisis counselor. So every Friday we have someone here on staff.
Marta Uren escaped Lviv with her son Dimitro. I wanted to put him in a school, she says, to find somewhere so he's not sitting at home by himself. Dimitro, like every Ukrainian student who moved here, was given a scholarship, making the $7,000 tuition free. They're handed uniforms, books, and whatever they need to replicate home.
But does it feel like your home being here?
I think no, but I miss home, yeah, because there I born, there in my family, my father, and it's too difficult, but I feel good there.
And the principal tells us at first they're planning on just taking 20 kids, but they are well beyond that, with more possibly coming on the way. Sometimes they just show up unannounced. So right now she is trying to find other schools in the area in case there's any possible overflow. Shep?
Perry Russum, live in Chicago. New calls tonight to develop a treatment for long COVID. Scientists estimate between 7 and 23 million Americans have experienced COVID symptoms that last for months on end. The CDC reports some people experience brain fog, trouble sleeping, heart palpitations, mood swings, and many other symptoms. There's one drug in particular that's getting attention as a possible treatment, Pfizer's antiviral called Paxlovid. Right now, Paxlovid is authorized only to prevent high-risk patients with COVID from getting severely ill, but new anecdotes from long haulers are raising some interest in the medical community. In this preprint report, a healthy and vaccinated woman in her mid-40s said her lingering symptoms were so bad she couldn't even work. Then her doctor prescribed Paxlovid. After a few days, the woman reported that her long COVID symptoms improved rapidly. Important to note, this report has not been peer-reviewed, but it could lay the groundwork for future research on long COVID treatments. CBC's Meg Terrell covers science and medicine for us. Meg, are doctors taking this seriously?
Well, Chef, doctors are careful, of course, about putting too much stock in single case reports, but there certainly is a push for more trials for long COVID, and specifically questions about whether broader use of Paxlovid could prevent long COVID. Dr. Anthony Fauci last week raising the idea, saying, quote, "We have more Paxlovid now than we have people who can use Paxlovid," because it's restricted only to those in high-risk groups. But he suggested more flexibility may be coming, potentially to help prevent long COVID in more people, not just those at highest risk of severe disease. Dr. Paul Sachs, clinical director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Brigham and Women's Hospital, said theoretically it could help.
If long COVID is the result of this viral replication at the outset of the illness, could treatment of COVID-19 early on reduce the risk of getting long COVID?
Now, Pfizer, the maker of Paxlovid, doesn't currently have trials underway focusing on long COVID, but the company tells us its current studies will have follow-up out to 6 months, which could provide some insights. It has released some early results on use of the drug in people who aren't considered high risk. Those results missed the primary goal of reducing how long people feel symptoms, but suggested a potential benefit in lowering their risk of hospitalization. The study also showed the drug reduces how much virus people are carrying faster, which Dr. Sachs says could be helpful with long COVID and also to make people less contagious. He said he wants to see more results from the study, which Pfizer says are expected in the second half of this year. Another trial using the drug to prevent infection in people who've been exposed, Pfizer says should have results in the coming weeks. So why not just use Paxlovid more broadly right now? Well, a main concern is it could lead to the development of viral resistance, rendering the medicine ineffective. And it's not totally benign to take, but more studies should give more answers about how best to use it. Shep?
Meg Terrell, thanks. The United States Secret Service protecting the president is not the sole purpose. The agency's also cracking down on crypto fraud. From domestic scams to international crime rings, the Secret Service reports fraudsters are buying and selling millions of dollars in illegal digital assets. In a CNBC exclusive, Eamon Javers spoke with the agency's top official overseeing crypto investigations about how these criminals move the money.
we're inside a rarely seen secure room in Washington.
What is this facility we're standing in?
Right now, we're standing at U.S. Secret Service headquarters within the GIOC, which is the Global Investigative Operations Center, which is our hub for our most complex and impactful international cases.
No longer just capturing counterfeit money rings, the Secret Service is also tracking illicit Bitcoin proceeds on the blockchain, which is the public ledger for all crypto transactions.
The Secret Service is now the primary agency investigating the illicit use of digital assets.
David Smith is Assistant Director of the Office of Investigations.
One of the guiding principles of the blockchain is that it was a public ledger that's shared, and everyone with a little bit of computing power has access to it, to include law enforcement. So the Secret Service isn't doing anything that wasn't the original intent of the blockchain. We're just using the same tracking and tracing mechanisms that were intended.
So would you say that crypto is actually more traceable than good old-fashioned cash for a criminal?
In many ways, it is.
So far, the numbers are staggering. The agency has seized more than $102 million worth of crypto in 254 cases. Here, we see analysts and special agents examining Bitcoin wallet addresses.
So they're just making correlations and seeing where the hotspots are, or like a heat map, if you will, to see where the illicit activity is occurring and then focusing on those areas. Because one of the things that is in the benefit of the bad guys is the volume of activity that's occurring out there.
Are you using the same kind of software that all the rest of us have access to?
When you follow a digital currency wallet, it's no different than an email address that has some correlating identifiers. And once a person and another person make a transaction and that gets into the blockchain, we have the ability to follow that email address or wallet address, if you will, and trace it through the blockchain.
Criminals frequently use techniques to obscure the digital money, something Smith compares to a house of mirrors.
All of them exist exactly to keep law enforcement off of the bad guy's trail. They want to go into the blockchain and make as many transfers as possible so they can lose us like an old-fashioned surveillance.
Recent high-profile crypto cases cracked by the Secret Service include an international laundering operation based in Romania that targeted 900 victims across the United States, and a ring of Russian-speaking cyber criminals who threatened U.S. companies with ransomware attacks. One trend seen in cases like this is the use of money mules who may unwittingly be recruited by a fraudster.
So these people are just duped into moving the money. They think they're doing one thing, but they're actually doing another.
Correct. And sometimes it's just a matter of trying to make a quick buck. They don't have any criminal intent.
And to protect their investments, crypto criminals regularly watch the market, and they convert Bitcoin into stable coins, which is pegged to an asset like a national currency.
Because, you know, the criminals, hey, they're humans too. They want to avoid some of that market volatility associated with some of the major coins.
Interesting that they're going after stable coins because they hate that volatility. I mean, it is like a roller coaster ride every day watching these prices fluctuate, and the criminals hate that too.
The criminals hate that too, because keep in mind, they're dealing with other criminals, and some of these criminals may apply some consequences they don't want to deal with as well.
Yeah, so if your Bitcoin crashes, you have a problem if you're a
criminal. You may have a problem based on who you just transacted with.
Shep, criminals love crypto because of the global nature of the coins and the ease of using them. But what David Smith was telling me is that criminals are learning that volatility and traceability mean that cryptocurrency is not the ideal solution that many of the criminals thought it would be just a few years ago, Shep.
Eamon Javers, thank you. The White House announcing a self-imposed ban on anti-satellite weapons tests. Vice President Harris expected to make it official tonight during her visit to the Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. According to a document that we've obtained, this move directly addresses a Russian anti-satellite weapons test from last year. On November the 15th, the Russians destroyed their own Soviet-era satellite. The U.S. Space Command says it broke into more than 1,500 pieces of now space junk. A month later, the Pentagon called for a ban on anti-satellite weapons testing. A rare late-season nor'easter set to hit tonight. From the Appalachians to upstate New York, meteorologists expect at least 8 million people to see heavy snow here in the month of April. And parts of upstate New York, they tell us, could get a foot. Officials warn this will be wet, heavy snow that could down trees and lead to power outages. National Weather Service reports snowfall rates in some areas could be as much as 2 inches an hour. And as the storm moves across the Northeast, meteorologists say Long Island and southern Connecticut could see up to 2 feet of coastal flooding. Officials urging people in those areas to stay off the roads. An autistic teenager in California has been found after he disappeared almost 3 years ago. Connor Jack Oswalt was just 17 when he left his family home during lunch one day. Earlier this month, sheriff's deputies in Summit County, Utah, picked up a shivering man outside a gas station. You can see him here in this police body cam video. They say they let him warm up in their squad car, but ended up combing through missing persons reports, sensing there was more to his story. That's when they realized their homeless man was Connor Jack, just a month shy of his 20th birthday. They called his parents to the station. A deputy's body cam then captured the moment that they learned their son had been found alive.
Is it him?
A little bit older, but yeah.
My sweetheart's life. Oh my God.
Connor Jack's parents say they relocated to his birthplace of Idaho Falls, hoping that someday he'd find his way back home. Investigators say it's still unclear where he was during the nearly 3 years that he was missing. Johnny Depp's expected to testify against his ex-wife tomorrow in court. The movie star suing Amber Heard for defamation and for $50 million. A legal expert on what Depp will face when he takes the stand. Plus, it's called the Ever Forward. But ever since March the 13th, it's been stuck in Chesapeake Bay. Now, engineers finally got the 1,000-foot ship out of the mud. Johnny Depp expected to take center stage for what could be the biggest performance of his life. He's entertained millions worldwide, but tomorrow, it all comes down to seven people inside a Fairfax, Virginia courthouse. The jury that will see him take the stand in his own defense and hear him testify under oath against his ex-wife, Amber Heard. Johnny Depp is suing her for defamation over an op-ed she wrote in the Washington Post about surviving domestic violence. Though she never mentions Johnny Depp by name, he says it's clear the accusations of abuse were directed towards him. Today, the jury heard from the couple's former private doctor. The doctor said he never saw any physical violence between them. But he did refute a major claim that Johnny Depp made against his ex. In a text message to his doctor, Depp admits to cutting off his own finger with a knife while the couple was in Australia. Until now, he said, Amber Heard severed his finger after she threw a vodka bottle at him. David Henderson now, lawyer and CNBC contributor. What are Depp's lawyers going to try to accomplish with him on the stand here?
You know, Shep, they're going to try to paint him in the best light possible, but here's a broader picture. He can't avoid doing something that he never wanted to do, and that was discuss these issues in public. This entire lawsuit, if you look at the history of his relationship with his ex-wife, was designed to try to prevent him having to discuss these things openly, and nothing his lawyers can do will prevent that tomorrow.
Cross-examination likely to be intense. What do you expect from Amber Heard's lawyers?
I expect them to march down through supporting everything that she said. And you have to look at it in a global sense. This is a case about making false statements, and she never mentions him specifically. On top of that, he has to prove that not only did she mention him specifically and make false statements, but she did it knowing that the statements were false or showing a reckless disregard for whether or not they were false. So her lawyers are going to march through supporting what she didn't do here in this situation, why it can't be used against her. But the overall result will be making Depp look pretty bad.
Is this going to be a he said, she said once Heard takes the stand, if she does?
Shep, I think it already is a he said, she said. If you look at the reports, we're seeing lots of witnesses who testified, but here's what you have to remember. Juries are everyday, hardworking people. And when you bring up your private doctor and your security guard and they're testifying for you, what an everyday, hardworking person thinks is, I get that they're testifying for you, but you also write their check. And so if you take all those people out, it is absolutely a he said, she said, with some pictures that don't make him have a solid case.
You know, if you're on the jury, though, and you hear the finger thing, I mean, forever he'd said she did it. And now he admits on a text that he did it. I mean, there's a lie right there.
That is, Shep. And once you catch someone lying in court, the entire case becomes about the fact that they lied. And when what you're claiming is that the other side is really doing something dishonest and there's documentation of you lying, it's really hard to get a jury to side with you.
Yep. He'll testify tomorrow. David Henderson, thank you. Electric vehicles are everywhere, on the road at least. But what about on the water? No fuel, no fumes, no loud motors. inside this new push to electrify boats of all kinds, speedboats, ferries, even giant cargo ships. Plus, it's a marathon, not a sprint. But don't tell that to these women. The epic battle in Boston and the final 4 seconds that determined the winner. InfoWars and two other companies owned by the conspiracy-peddling radio host Alex Jones have filed for bankruptcy. It comes as Jones faces defamation lawsuits over his absurd and false claims that the Sandy Hook massacre was a government-staged hoax. He later retracted those claims. Family members of some of the murdered first graders and educators say Jones fans have harassed them and made death threats. In November, a judge found Alex Jones liable for the damages. A judge is set to begin in August to determine how much money he should pay the families. If granted, Chapter 11 bankruptcy protections would pause the lawsuits against Jones companies. The ship stuck in the Chesapeake Bay for more than a month is finally free. Just yesterday, the Coast Guard said a combination of high tides and tugboats helped pull the ship called the Ever Forward into a nearby channel. Coast Guard says it's still investigating how that ship ran aground. The Ever Forward is the sister ship to the Ever Given. That ship got stuck in the Suez Canal last year and halted global trade for days. Officials say the Ever Forward didn't leak any fuel, and they say maritime experts will inspect the ship's hull for damage. Meantime, some new boating companies are promising ships with no risk of fuel leaks or even motor noise. They're going all electric. Major companies jumping on the trend, hoping to ride the electric wave out to the high seas. Here's NBC's Kerry Sanders.
There's no denying it. The next wave of electric is in the water. Just like when Tesla hit the market, there's an eye-grabbing sexiness to all-electric boats. Candela, built by maritime engineers in Sweden, is a pleasure craft that has set in motion much bigger plans, a fully electric flying ferry.
We're launching a ferry called P30 for the city of Stockholm in the end of this year. And this will be a 30-person shuttle ferry using the same tech as in our leisure boats. So it will be flying above the surface with higher speed and also lower energy consumption than any electric ship before it.
Hydrofoil wings coupled with an electric motor boast improved speed, no wake, and significant environmental improvements.
How much will it save in terms of carbon output?
Compared to a conventional ferry, it will be 80% more efficient, but the carbon dioxide savings will be around 99%.
Here in the United States, when you think about an electric boat, you probably envision something like this, a cute, quiet runabout, top speed, 7 miles per hour. But that is all about to change. General Motors, which has announced it's moving towards an all-electric future with cars, has also announced a 25% stake in Pure Watercraft. Yes, an electric boat manufacturer.
Okay, here we go.
It's all happening as President Biden's infrastructure bill set aside $1 billion for alternative transportation, including electric boats. From New York's Hudson River to the Florida Straits, electric could be the new power player. At Niagara Falls, the iconic Maid of the Mist company operates 2 electric zero-emission sightseeing boats. In Seattle, where ferries are the largest emitters of greenhouse gases, operators plan to launch an electric hydrofoil by 2025. But it's cargo ships, which haul about 90% of our global trade, that are an even bigger problem. At 3% of the world's emissions, if global shipping were a country, it would be the 6th largest producer of greenhouse gases.
So we have to reduce our pollution and have to be more careful with the available resources.
Maritime engineers are full speed ahead on that problem. The Yara Birkeland from Norway's Yara International is not only the first fully electric cargo ship, but just like some Teslas, autonomous.
Is this an experiment or is this actually something that you believe we will see more of?
It is not an experiment for us. It is a first of the kind. It will be in regular commercial operation. And I strongly believe that we will see more of it.
The biggest challenge, infrastructure for charging just isn't there yet, but it's coming. Proving what you long thought is wrong. Electricity and water do mix. For the news, I'm Kerry Sanders.
Well, 2 Kenyan runners taking home the top spots at the Boston Marathon today, and the women's finish was epic. After mile 22, these two took the lead, kept overtaking each other for the top spot. It came down to a battle to the finish on Boylston Street, and that's when one of them took off in a dead sprint.
They can see the finish line now on Boylston Street. And when one of the greatest races in Boston Marathon history on the 50th anniversary of the first ever women's elite field, the best marathoner in the world on the women's side is going to come through with a victory, but needed every stride to get to the finish line first. Paris Jepchichir is the Boston champion.
And she crossed just 4 seconds before her opponent, finishing in just over 2 hours, 21 minutes. In the last 8 months, she's won an Olympic gold, the New York City Marathon, and now Boston. 70 seconds left in a race to the finish, a federal judge striking down the Biden administration's mandate for planes, trains, and other public transportation. Passengers posting the announcement a short time ago on a Delta flight out of Atlanta.
On our Delta hub, it says masks now optional for employees, customers following White House.
They're happy on Delta, but Amtrak reports it'll keep its mask mandate in place despite the ruling. And the battle for the Donbas region has begun. After weeks of regrouping and repositioning troops, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, says Russia has started its large-scale offensive in eastern Ukraine. And now, you know the news. Of this Monday, April the 18th, 2022, I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The News on CNBC. And listen to The News podcast on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platforms. And if you like the facts, the truth, the news without the pundits and the opinion, tell your friends. And we'll see you here tomorrow night on CNBC. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.